If you have something to say, say it proudly, said Austin Head, entertainer and candidate for Phoenix City Council. It will be now 10 plus years since I became infected, but now it is in remission. And even though because of instilled prejudice, stigma, and lack of information, I am living proof that AIDS can be controlled. Hillary Clinton has become a tireless champion of global health and women's rights. On the eve of World AIDS Day a couple years back, she released a blueprint for creating an AIDS-free generation. Hillary was quoted to say, "To the next Secretary of State, you have some big shoes to fill." What does HIV look like to you? What do you think it looks like through the eyes of a child, through the eyes of a youth? Think about all the things we have learned in the past and present day about HIV/AIDS. I'm not going to bore you with statistics or definitions or fill your heads with any of that. We are here to commemorate and share and make aware how AIDS has changed the world in the past 30 or so years. Now Wayne Binion will be coming up.
I looked up a lot of information when I was trying to decide what to say in this, and I found that there are about 34 million people in the world living with HIV, and so far about 25 million people have died of AIDS. There's also a Unitarian Universalist Global AIDS Coalition that was founded back in about 10 years ago as part of a social justice action group in Portland. And from the website of the World AIDS Campaign, they tell us that World AIDS Day is held on the 1st December each year as it is an opportunity for people worldwide to unite in the fight against HIV, show their support for people living with HIV, and to commemorate people who have died. World AIDS Day was the first ever Global Health Day, and the first one was held in 1988. In 1986, the virus that causes AIDS received the name that we now use for it, human immunodeficiency virus, shortened to HIV. 1986 is also the year I found out I had HIV. This is World AIDS Day, not Wayne AIDS Day. So I don't want to talk too much about myself in this. The major impact of the pandemic is actually in sub-Saharan Africa. And yet, that is far away, and I don't know anything about it, really, no more than anyone else. I could talk about the devastation of learning that you have a deadly killer inside you, or the helplessness of caring for the person you love more than life itself as he dies. But there's also a camaraderie that develops in a support group and the satisfaction of being in a drug trial that yields a more effective treatment. Sometimes there's even a feeling of accomplishment in realizing I'm still alive and kicking after more than a quarter century. I will cut this short merely to participate in observing this World AIDS Day, and I hope we all find a way to fight against HIV, show support for people living with it, and commemorate those who've died. Thank you.
I want to thank the worship committee for giving me this opportunity to reflect on AIDS from a very different perspective. That is my life as a nurse and my life as a member of another church in San Francisco, an oasis parish with far too many names on the AIDS quilt. And again, to then conclude by looking at how both of my spiritual communities are united. My first experience with communicable disease was in the 50s when I was a student nurse. Yeah, I've been a nurse for a long time. where he took care of people with TB, diphtheria, and polio. We were scrupulous with hand washing. We wore masks. Little did we know that 30 years later, this would be what we would be doing all the time. In 1987, I was the chief nurse executive for nursing at Kaiser in San Francisco in the very early stages of the pandemic, when the diagnosis would, for many, not all, lead to death. I remembered that little was known about its origins, and that fear led doctors and dentists to propose legislation within the state of California to allow them not to care for patients with AIDS. Fortunately, then Governor Duke Majan vetoed that legislation. Compare that approach to the nurses, doctors, aides on Ward 86 in San Francisco General, who opened the first and now internationally known AIDS unit and worked not in spite of their fear, but along with the fear of their patients. How I thought as a chief nurse exec, would I lead a department of 1,800 people who were asked each day to live a code that probably none of us ever thought would mean what it meant in 1987. The nurse in all professional relationships practices with compassion and respect for the inherent dignity and worth and uniqueness of every individual, unrestricted by considerations of social or economic status, personal attributes, or the nature of health problems. Do those words sound familiar to you? Not unusual in that Florence Nightingale was the product of an Anglican and a Unitarian home, and that she learned to be a nurse with Lutheran nuns. She and her nurses battled malaria and typhus. Again, scrupulous hand washing and sanitation were her rules. While I was at Kaiser, we looked at how could we respect all of our patients, and we changed our visiting policy. Some of you may know that in critical care units at that time, only family were allowed to visit. We allowed our patients to determine who would visit. We pondered, were there times when a healthcare professional could be exempt from caring for patients? And our only answer was no. Fortunately, in 1987, the CDC provided something called universal precautions, where we treated all bodily fluids as potentially infections. Given the stigma and fear of being tested, the fear that your insurance company would find out that you had AIDS and be dropped, we were again scrupulous in how, despite what people might fear, provided for extraordinary privacy and confidentiality. There were things that I dealt with that I never thought I would have to deal with, the mundane. What type of gloves would we use? What volume? What sizes? What kind of holders? Where would they be? In the room? Outside the room? What about goggles and shields? What about nurses and phlebotomists and doctors who handled needles at all times? It wouldn't be until 2000, with the work of the American Nurses Association, the Honorable Pete Clark, Nurse Carolyn McCarthy of New York, ANA President Karen Daly of Massachusetts, with some help from Teddy Kennedy, that Bill Clinton signed national legislation requiring safety needles, although they had been available since 1980. I know, doesn't it seem strange? At the same time that healthcare institutions were determining how to manage this pandemic, my spiritual community was in a similar situation. We too needed to reorganize how we provided not only pastoral care, but support services in the home. Were we used to an incidental need, maybe every 3 to 6 months, of someone who would need a meal or communion taken to them or transportation to medical visits or caring for pets? We weren't prepared for the volume that all of these would be needed by significant numbers. We mourned the loss of talent, struggled with the paucity of home care services available, particularly to those without health care insurance. You'll also have to remember that this was BC, not before Christ, but before computers. There was no internet, no mobile phone, no Facebook. We relied on telephone trees and announcements and used word of mouth. Another issue for which we were unprepared was that of parents who had lost touch with their sons or those who had been estranged or disowned because of their sexuality. They reappeared in lives, some with compassion and care, others not so, denying the presence of loved ones. Unfortunately, they didn't control our memorial services and how we could be an open and inviting place to remember and honor lives and to grieve in love. Finally, what has changed and what remains the same? AIDS in the United States is a chronic illness, yet many in this country are still engaged in unsafe sex and refuse testing. Women are unknowingly infected and bear children who are HIV positive. Even though needle exchange programs are effective in reducing the incidence of HIV and Hep C, cities refuse to approve these programs because they believe they encourage drug use. Health professionals advocate for HIV testing to become as routine as your complete blood count, and fear and ignorance continue to be the response of many. The theme for this World's AIDS Day is zero new HIV infections, zero discrimination, zero AIDS-related death. What then can be our response? Recognizing both as a teacher and as a member of a spiritual community that knowledge is power, and how we educate our children about compassion and mercy and respect and about healthy life habits. How we use education and love to be both our individual and our collective response to ignorance, pain, and fear. What is it then that remains the same? What is it that unites both of our faith traditions? I suggest the words from the book of Micah, the prophet, whose words are written, surprisingly so to me when I saw them, on the walls of the First Unitarian Church in San Francisco. What does the Lord require of you but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God? Thank you.
Good morning. Jelly Andy Hansen. Today is World AIDS Day. AIDS stands for Acquired Immune Deficiency Syndrome. You all probably knew that, but I wanted to say it out loud. World AIDS Day was originally conceived in 1987 by two men working at the Global AIDS Program of the World Health Organization in Geneva, one of whom was a journalist at our own KPIX in San Francisco. He was on leave at that time. It was first observed worldwide on December 1st, 1988, and according to Wikipedia, it's now the longest-running disease awareness and prevention initiative of its kind in the history of public health. I remember that first World AIDS Day. I was living in Anchorage, Alaska that year, working as a Superior Court law clerk. It had been 3.5 years since I got my own HIV diagnosis, and I was actively involved with the Alaska AIDS Assistance Association as a volunteer and consumer. Through that connection, I became co-coordinator of Anchorage's inaugural observance of World AIDS Day. With sponsorship from the city of Anchorage, we gathered in a park on a chilly, windy afternoon.
Excuse me.
I keep my beautiful cough drop dispenser with me wherever I go. Okay. We gathered in a park on a chilly, windy afternoon. There were prayers, some speeches, and an extended ceremony with a long line of individuals coming to the podium and reading slips of paper with the names of Alaskans who had died of AIDS, then burning them one by one in a ceramic urn. We had media coverage from the major Alaska newspaper and three television stations. It was a sad occasion, but it felt good to stand up and be counted as someone who cared about AIDS. To do a little bit to dispel the darkness of general ignorance about AIDS and my own fears for myself. It would be another 7 years before the advent of protease inhibitor drugs began to seriously ameliorate the death toll from AIDS in the United States. I was first diagnosed with HIV in 1985 at the County Health Clinic in Oakland. The first widely available HIV test was just out. I went to County Health for testing because it was completely anonymous, and I wasn't sure it would be safe to let my health insurer, Kaiser Permanente, know my test result. It took 2 weeks for the test to be completed, and then I returned, sat in a room with a health worker, and opened an envelope with my result inside. I remember seeing it say, positive, and thinking, whew, that's good. The health worker had to gently explain to me that it meant I had been exposed to HIV. I then retested in the same clinic to confirm the result, which was the standard procedure at the time. I was in a functioning state of shock during those weeks. A piece of information which hardly changed my outward status changed my inner life enormously. I was more anxious getting the second test than I'd been at the first. In an attempt to engage the 60-ish public health nurse who was taking my blood and thereby to soothe myself, I asked her how it felt to be testing people for HIV. I can only say it seemed like a good idea at the time. She told me fiercely that she deeply resented being compelled by her employer to draw blood for people who might have HIV. That she was doing it against her will, that she was nearing her retirement age, and she feared she would get HIV at the end of her career and be cheated of her retirement years by an early death. It felt surreal to know it was me she was afraid of. I began taking the first medication available for HIV treatment, AZT, in 1987, and I've been taking medication twice or three times a day ever since. 3 years after getting my HIV diagnosis, I was able to share it with my parents. I graduated from law school and began a law practice and lived my life. I had often pondered in the early years that I would miss the millennium when, as I said in my head, I would have been 42. But it came and went. I developed severe liver disease as a consequence of having HIV, and I got an AIDS diagnosis in 1999. I was sick for quite a few years, but my well-being ultimately returned. I outlived my parents. This year, I attained the lowest rung of senior citizenship. I've had a full and satisfying life. Who knew that would happen? Certainly not me. I don't know why I lived while others didn't, except that I'm both lucky and privileged. AIDS still ends many lives, especially in the developing world. It devastates families, communities, and nations. Treatments which are technically available are still not practically available for a huge proportion of people with HIV and AIDS. People are still getting tested, are still afraid of getting tested, are in denial, are sometimes putting themselves and others at risk. The good news is that lots of people no longer think AIDS has nothing to do with them. The good news is that people are increasingly stepping up to personify and normalize AIDS and HIV. It's way too soon for AIDS to retreat from the political and social spotlight. There are still many minds to change and many lives to save. Talk to somebody about World AIDS Day, won't you? Let them know that they know in you a person who is affected by AIDS and cares about a solution. Thank you.
As Bill extinguishes the chalice, I'd like to leave you with these words today. May we take the spirit of today's Sunday celebration with us on our journey, perhaps holding it throughout the week. If my brother is sick, he needs healing. If my sister is sick, she needs healing. If my friends are sick, they need healing. Now is not the time to wonder why they are sick or what caused them to become sick or tell them how they might have prevented becoming sick. They need healing. Now is the time to try to make them well, to comfort them, to ease their pain. That is all that matters now. They need healers, not judges. And maybe these thoughts might guide us in other areas of our lives as well. Live in peace, spread peace, go in peace.